Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
This is The Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Greetings and welcome to Starkville.
Baseball Hall of Famer Jason Stark.
And then the robot said, strike.
That's why you're going in the Hall of Fame.
It's an inside the park home run, Doug Glanville.
Mike Trout is coffee at Starbucks with a double latte skinny.
Doug, are you ready to make some podcast magic?
I am ready. Bring on the magic wand. Let's do it.
Greetings and welcome to Starkville, now part of the Athletic Baseball Show, where you'll find great baseball talk all week long and all season long. I'm Jason Stark. I write about baseball for The Athletic. And the bad news is Doug Glanville has the week off. Doug, we miss you. But the good news is I'm joined by another one of my favorite people, the awesome voice of the Cubs on the Marquee Sports Network, Jim DeShays. Jim, welcome back to Starkville.
Great to be with you, Jason. I feel honored to be pinch hitting for the great Doug Glanville.
Is this your first career pinch hitting appearance, by the way?
No, it is not. That's another story altogether.
Oh, we might have you tell that story. Just give me a minute. I can't remember how I roped you into this, but I'm greatly appreciative of you and I. I've known each other a long time, had a lot of fun swapping tales. And look, this is a great time of year. We got all-star teams named. We got trade rumors starting to surface. We've had some wild swings in the standings. We've seen some of the craziest games of the year. We have the manager of the Cleveland Guardians, Terry Francona, on the show. So, Jim, don't you feel like you're living the dream, just entering the Starkville city limits?
You know, I've never been to Starkville, Mississippi, and I'm not sure that I've been to Starkville podcast before. Have I done this before?
Yes,
I don't
you
remember.
Have.
I don't
yes,
think, no. Have. We had you, Casper and I had you on our podcast.
That was just revenge for us having you and Lynn on ours.
That's right. That's right. We did.
The pandemic, I'm glad it was that unforgettable.
Fuzzy. The pandemic makes everything fuzzy. But yes, of course, I'm thrilled. I'm honored to be here. What else am I going to do?
Well, I'm sure we could think of stuff. But, you know, here's the thing. We don't get to visit with Jim DeShays nearly enough. So before we welcome in Terry Francona, I've got some important questions I need to ask you.
I'm eager.
You ready? You are.
Yes.
Ready. Okay. First off, we had the all-star teams named on Sunday, and all everybody wants to talk about is the snubs. So here's the first question. Were you ever an all-star snub?
I don't think I ever rose to the level of snubbiness. I think there were a couple of years where I was, you know, under consideration. I had a couple, you know, really good first halves at some point along the way. And I heard like through the grapevine after the team had been named that I was close and maybe even oh so close one time. But in the final analysis, when you looked at the people who made the team, No, I can't argue that I was ever snubbed. Probably the biggest snub I ever got was failing to make the Pee Wee travel team in hockey when I was like 9 years old. I certainly, wow. Yeah.
Well, what happened there?
I don't know. I think it was politics. I think it was, the coaches, knew somebody who knew a kid. And so that kind of pushed me away from hockey into hoops.
So snubbiness was running rampant there in upstate New York.
Yeah, it was. But as far as the All-Star, I could close a couple times, but that would have been fun, right? That would have been a good deal to do at least one time.
Yeah, it's a great time.
Yeah. Because here's the thing, right? So Pat Hughes, the great Pat Hughes, the play-by-play man on Cubs radio, every day he introduces Ron Coomer, his partner, as former All-Star Ron Coomer, because Coomer made an All-Star team with the Twins. Now, every now and then when Boog is my partner, Boog Shambi, Boog, everybody knows and loves Boog. When Boog leaves, Pat will slide over and do TV with us. And I can tell he's like, and I'm joined with former major league pitcher, Jim DeShane. There's no All-Star. There's no former Gold Glove winner or Cy Young Award winner. Just pitcher.
Wow. That's heartbreaking.
I feel like I'm letting him down.
I think you
I'm
have.
Good. I'm fine with it. I've that was my career ended 30 plus years ago, so I'm good with it.
Okay. Well, all right. Here's another one. It's trade rumor season. Before I ask you about your own human trade rumor history, I should ask you about Wilson Contreras.
Sure.
What if you're going to pick a team in the Who Trades for Wilson Contreras sweepstakes? What team would you pick?
Yeah. It's interesting. I don't know that I can identify a single team, but obviously, teams that are in contention, they need help behind the plate. The Mets jump out at me. And Steve Cohen has been in go for it mode since he took over the ownership of the Mets. So I don't think he would shy away from making a deal if there's a good match with the Cubs. And we're on the premise, assuming here that Contreras does get dealt, and, it looks like he will, but there's no guarantee that that will happen. So I think the Cubs are in a position of strength here because Contreras is probably the most impactful position player that's out there right now with the year he's having and the fact that he's, a solid big league catcher and a really good offensive player, and he can DH and, he can even go out and play the field if you needed him to. So the Mets kind of, come to mind. Maybe the Padres, the Giants. I tell you, the team that could really use a catcher is the St. Louis Cardinals with Molina down with that knee. And Kisner is hitting a .180 or whatever it is. Would the Cubs trade Contreras to the St. Louis Cardinals? Would the Cardinals give up prime prospects to the Chicago Cubs? We'd be talking Lou Brock stuff here, right? Or Bruce Sutter,
No.
Yeah. So that's probably not going to happen.
All right. I think you just picked the Mets. We're going to say that you went with the Mets because I'm going to go Padres. Just because it feels like they trade for a catcher every year at the deadline, seems like it. So anyway, let's get back to you. You never did get traded at the deadline. You did get traded after the deadline in 1993, the year of the great Giants-Braves race. You went to the Giants. So were there a bunch of rumors at that deadline that you were sweating out?
No. I think... I don't know that there was this is obviously pre social media and there wasn't as many people tracking it. I'm sure there were players that were involved at the trade deadline that year. And then, after the waiver period passed, bigger names that probably got a lot of attention, but no, there wasn't a lot of rumors circulating around me, and I was too dumb to kind of read the tea leaves to think I just went to the ballpark every day and did my thing. The interesting thing about that trade is I could have vetoed it. Not that
you,
I had
you
any
10-5.
No, and I wasn't 10-5. I was like, and this maybe speaks to the whole DeShays vibe at the time. Andy McPhail was the general manager of the Twins. And I got traded to the Giants. We were here in Chicago. That's where I am now. And he called me to his hotel room. And he was like, well, we've got this trade with the Giants. They need help down the stretch. And, we're going to acquire this guy and that guy. But I don't really have to do it. So if you want to go be part of this playoff race with the Giants, we'll do the deal. If you don't, you stay here and you finish the season with us. So, and my wife happened to be in town. We talked about it. And there's always a certain certain amount of pressure on a player to accept that deal because you're thought of as less worthy if you don't go to the contending team because I want to win, right? But in hindsight, I wish I hadn't done it. I would have loved to finish the season out in Minnesota. I actually re-signed with the Twins the following year. But yeah, that was my trade story. Andy said, I got this deal, but I don't have to do it. But if you want to go, I said, all right, I'll go.
It doesn't usually work that way in my experience.
No. Yeah.
It's have a nice flight. You're on a plane in at least 45 minutes.
Yeah, it's like reverse tampering. You know, we can trade you, but we don't have to.
Well, I was actually following the Giants around at the time, so it was good to see you. I remember that.
Yeah, we had fun.
Yeah. All right, another thing. This past Sunday, Albert Pujols tied Stan Musial for the third most extra base hits in history. And I bet that sounds impressive, but I am doing a show right now with a man who holds the most unbreakable extra base hits record ever set. Jim, tell the people what your claim to fame is there.
Well, Jason, as you know, I hold the record for the most at-bats in a major league career without a single extra base hit. And if you think about all the players in the long history of this game that have extra base hits, there's a lot. But how many have none? Only one.
We're talking to them.
Yeah. When you filter for 378 at bats or whatever.
All right, just for the record, 373 career at bats, most at bats in history without an extra base hit. So, what would you say was the closest you ever came to somehow getting an extra base hit?
Oh, right at the beginning of my career, if I recall, my very first hit. Now, remember, I'm a left-handed hitter. My very first hit was off Joe Price, left-handed pitcher for the Reds. So my platoon splits, probably a reverse split guy, if you think about it. I hit a wobbly little ground ball down the third baseline that trickled into left field. And I'm just hauling butt down the first baseline in the only way I could. Had I even thought to look or made a turn, maybe I could have made it to second base. But I was like halfway to the right field corner, you know, by the time I turned around and came back. And then I think my next hit was pretty much right down the third baseline as well. And so, you know, the scouting report was out that this guy's never going to pull a major league fastball. And sooner or later, the third baseman was tight to the line. The left fielder, one time in New York, I swear to God, George Foster was straddling the left field line at Shea Stadium. But with every swing, I would foul one off over the dugout. And then, you know, George would take another step in the dugout. You know, Davey Johnson would be waving at him, go, go. And George was like as close to the third base line as you could be, the left field line as you could be. So that my only shot at a double was going to be down the left field line. But they kind of sniffed that out and started defending it.
You know, it's so funny you mentioned this because I went to your baseball reference page to just look up how many at-bats you had. And there on the page, I don't know if you ever looked at this, is your quote unquote advanced hitting stats. I've never seen these before. Okay. So I found this after going down that rabbit hole. What would you guess was your career pull percentage? In other words, what percent of balls that you put in play do you think was pulled?
Well, first of all, I didn't know they even measured that in the advanced hitting metrics. I'm going to say zero because I know one of the highlights of my career was in a hitting career anyway, was in a spring training game. I hit a ground ball to the second baseman off Ramon Martinez. And I thought that looked pretty legit. I was like, in my world, I was turning on it. And, you know, it's probably a little two hopper or whatever. And I felt... You know, they threw me out and I ran back to the dugout with a certain amount of pride. Like, that looks legit. That looks like something a real hitter might do.
A spring training 4-3 was the highlight of your offensive career.
Yeah, in all likelihood.
Wow. Well, you want to know the answer to this?
Yes, I'm curious. Did I pull one in the regular season?
It was larger than zero. It was single digits. 9%. 9.5%.
I pulled the ball.
Now some of the seasons are incomplete, so it could be lower. But there were some balls that you pulled. Maybe it might have something to do with the definition.
Yeah. I, like, they don't count. They don't count bunts, do they?
They probably do. I'd have to go into that.
Maybe a ground ball to the pitcher.
Well, here's another one. What would you guess was your career line drive percentage? So percentage of balls you put in play that were considered line drives.
I remember lining out to left field once. I think Joel Youngblood was the left fielder for the Reds. And this particular year, I ended up having 9 hits. I had a pretty good year. I had a bet with Mike Scott that year as to who would get the most hits. And it was like maybe my last start of the year, one of my last starts. And I hit the ball pretty hard. But I lined out, I think it was Joel Youngblood in left field. And that one, I remember, hey, that felt pretty good off the bat. But beyond that one, a real line drive, no, I can't recall.
So were you thinking it's one out of 343?
Probably.
Well, there's some strikeouts in there, too.
So. Yeah. There might have been a couple line drives to the third baseman.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
So once again, it was single digits. It was greater than zero. It was right on the nose, 9%. 9% was kind of your magic number.
Yeah.
You had the little inside-out thing going on. And
Yeah, that was my power over the third base dugout. That was my power stroke.
Well, can't beat that. It's good for those fans. And back in the
except for that one lady at the end of the dugout in Candlestick Park that wasn't paying attention.
That didn't go well?
Did not go well. You know the thing when people yell heads up and you're supposed to duck and you turn to face the danger? She turned as the ball was hit her right in the nose.
And oh my.
Blew her up. Yeah.
Yeah. What'd you do for her?
I felt really bad.
I'm glad to hear that at least.
Yeah. I felt bad for her. I didn't send flowers or anything. I
probably should have. We better move on from this topic. Here's probably the most important question I could ask you. Next to your record for hitting zero extra base hits, what do you think is the next most unbreakable record in baseball?
I would say anything that has to do with pitching complete games, right? But starters, you know, no hitters, complete games. Even aside from the Haas, Radborn, Pud Galvins, when they, you know, completed 63 games in a season. Even if you look in the modern era and you go back to the 60s and 70s, the way pitching is, you know, the way pitching is handled now, those records will never be broken. Nolan's strikeout record will never be broken. Complete game records, no hitter records. You know, it's just not going to happen.
Right. And a guy spent how many years in baseball?
Did me?
You spend? Yeah.
40-ish?
No, I mean, as a player.
Oh, as a player?
Yeah.
Parts of 12.
All right. So 12 years without an extra base hit. That's about as unbreakable as it gets. And so, right. Oh. So now we have the universal DH. It's officially not breakable. Are you grateful for the universal DH? So your record is unbreakable, or is the sport making a big mistake here?
You and I agree on this point, unless you've changed your opinion. The sport is making a big mistake on this because we like the oddities that come with pitcher hitting. We like a guy that never gets an extra base hit. We like Bartolo Colon hitting a home run. We like all the trivia associated with weird things that happen with pitchers hitting. And we love the pitchers that can hit. We love to honor, Mike Hampton, the improvements John Lester made as a Cubs, as a hitter. It was really fun to watch. But that all goes away now.
It all goes away except for one guy. And Shohei Ohtani, he had a game last week where he struck out 10 hitters on the mound, drove in 2 as a hitter, and he stole a base. That had never been done. But I got me to thinking, what do you think was your greatest resemblance to Ohtani?
Yeah. Kelly Leak, right, the kid with the Bad News Bears. In Little League, there was a guy named Randy Spud Frederick who was a really good two-way player in my hometown. Spud was about as close to Ohtani as I've ever seen. And then Babe Ruth. Those would be the three comps for me. the pitching and slugging of Ruth, Kelly Leak, legend, and Spud Frederick for the Alcoa Braves, who is such a good athlete. He went to the finals of the punt, pass, and kick. That's how good Spud was. But yeah, what this guy is doing is there are no comps, right? I mean,
no.
And if, I'm thinking of the guys I've watched over the years, like Carlos Zambrano, really good hitting pitcher, and he would pinch hit and would hit home runs. But this Ohtani's guy is playing every day. He's DHing, and he's one of the better hitters in the game, better sluggers in the game. So, yeah, there is no. But Ruth is the only one.
So, wait, you compare to Ruth or he compares to Ruth? Just let's just, for the record.
Ohtani compares to Ruth. Did I misunderstand the question?
You compared to him that much? I don't even remember the question anymore.
Were we trying to find a comp for Ohtani or for me?
Who the heck cares?
There are no comps for me in the game now because the pitchers can't hit.
Right. You're definitely officially one of a kind, and we're all grateful for that. And you and I could do this all day long, but we have a special guest today. And guess what? He just got back from the dentist.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Victorinox, the makers of the original Swiss Army knife, have been a reliable companion for life's everyday challenges, mastering functionality, innovation, iconic design, and uncompromising quality with its products. The Victorinox Swiss Army Knife provides you with all the things you don't think about until you need it. Tweezers, a screwdriver, and even a corkscrew. With the Victorinox Swiss Army Knife, you can be prepared to master everyday life. You can find Victorinox Swiss Army Knives at Dick's Sporting Goods.
So, Jim, what do you say we welcome in a very special visitor to Starkville? He's the manager of the Cleveland Guardians. And I know he wants me to also mention he's my former neighbor and fellow volleyball dad, Terry Francona. Terry, thanks for running straight from the dentist chair to Starkville. How's your mouth?
It's I'm half numb on one side, Jay. And actually, when you made that introduction, I was looking around. I'm like, who's he introducing? It can't be me. When you said special guest. But you know what? I've probably been alleged to have been numb in other areas of my head. So it's probably just all in the day.
I don't know what you're talking about. You know, it feels like every time we talk to you, man, you're battling some sort of health thing, dental thing. How is your health these days?
You know, I would say it's just aggravating. That's, and again, compared to maybe where it's been, certainly not life-threatening. I mean, this toe thing was one of the hardest things I've ever had done. And believe me, I've had just about everything done, as you're alluding to. But this toe thing is kind of a handful. Still kind of limping around sometimes, but I'm getting through it. And the other stuff, I'm working on it. I'm really lucky. You know, the last two places I've worked, you know, we had Mass General and now we have the Cleveland Clinic. In fact, when Mike Segi, our longtime traveling secretary, went over to have surgery a couple weeks ago, I told him, I said, you tell everybody over there in the OR, I said hello. I said, I'll be back soon. I don't know what it'll be for, but I'll be back and say hello to him.
You've got to be the all-time career leader in managerial surgeries, don't you think?
Jay, I think, you know, counting the small ones, like things on your fingers, I'm probably over 40, which that's really nothing to brag about.
That's crazy.
And just think if I would have played more. I didn't play that much. It would have really been bad.
Well, let me ask you this, though. You know, I'm just thinking that you're that guy who's always helping people around you deal with stuff. Who helped you through all of this?
You know, I tell people all the time, I think I've set the record in Major League Baseball for being around good people. And I that's the one thing I'll brag about. And I guess our coaching staff here, you know, Chris and Cherney, they have been so good. I lean on our coaches way more now than I'm comfortable with, not because they can't do their job, but just because I'm a little slower than I used to be. And that bothers me a lot of times, but they have really picked me up and they're good. So sometimes I just try to stay out of their way.
Mm-hmm. One more, then we'll let JD in here. But did all the time that you spent away from the game in 2020 and 2021 give you a different perspective on the stuff that you love about the game and you love about managing?
You know, I've been asked that a lot, and it would certainly probably be the easy answer to say yes. But I thought I had a pretty good feel for it anyway. I mean, I've never wanted to do anything else in life, ever, ever. You know, I took a realtor class 1 year after I got out of playing, and I went through it for about 3 weeks. And I remember thinking, nobody's going to buy a house from me. So, you know, I went into coaching like 3 days later. Buddy Bell called me. It was the best thing I ever did. But I think I had a pretty good perspective, at least on my love for the game. I still haven't figured out when we lose, it kills me. You know, I mean, and I guess when that goes away, it's probably time to do something else.
Where, Tito, along the way, and this would be a curious question to ask former minor league teammates, major league teammates, when did you decide you wanted to manage? And if we had pulled some of your minor league teammates, who on this club would be a big league manager someday? Would you have been at the top of that list?
I wouldn't even have made the list. You know, I was a typical young upstart, thought I was going to lead the league in hitting, make a lot of money, retire on my own terms. And, you know, 4 months into my major league career, I'm one knee surgery into it. And then a year later, I'm another one into it. And I spent the last 9 years just hanging on. And I didn't realize at the time, because I was so busy trying to make myself just valuable enough to make a roster. But what ended up happening was I was watching different managers, different organizations, how they did things. And in so many ways, I would think, boy, that was, you know, I'd really respected it. Then every so often I think, man, I don't know if I'd do it like that. Then when the Cardinals released me for what I said was the last time, Buddy Bell called me, who had been my roommate with the Reds and a guy that I got a lot of my baseball philosophy from, just because I respected so much how he went about his business. He asked me if I wanted to start coaching. And that was really the first time I thought about it, but it was the best decision I ever made.
So coaching then led to the managerial bug. I mean, when you started coaching, did you think, okay, I'm going to parlay this into a managerial career? Or was this, I'm just glad to be in a uniform, going to the ballpark?
You know what, Jim? I don't know that. I think times were a little different back then. I was a hitting instructor my first year, and then I went to South Bend the next year and started managing and really enjoyed it. Then went to Birmingham, but I don't remember thinking, this is what I have to do. I remember when Buddy went to Detroit and he took me as his third base coach. And I remember thinking, okay, this is pretty cool. Like I really enjoyed that. But things happen quickly sometimes. And then I got to Philly, shoot, man, I was learning on the run. Like, and I knew it. And that's a hard place to be learning on the run. But I just knew I wanted to be in baseball. I didn't have to be a manager.
So I'm going to circle back to the dentist. And Terry Francona goes to the dentist, having won World Series, managed all these postseason games, been under all this duress. Is it a stressful situation? I think it would be awesome if you were just like, nervous as hell going into a dentist appointment, given everything else you've experienced in your career.
The dentist here, he can tell by my reaction how we're playing. Because there's sometimes where I'm just, that drill hasn't even hit me yet, and I'm yelling. And, you know, it's just, and today was one of those days. But unfortunately, I haven't figured out a way to kind of put the cape on and be Superman when I can handle. Jason probably heard me say, I can handle surgeries, I can handle things, but I don't like being sick. I don't like going to the dentist. I turn into the biggest baby there ever was.
Who likes going to the dentist? Do we know anybody who likes going to the dentist? I'm going tomorrow. I'm not looking forward to it.
No, it's not. You're right. It's not a fun. It's, yeah.
Yeah. The eye doctor's great, right? A trip to the eye doctor. That's fun. Dentist, no.
As long as you can see the board, it's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Let's turn to something that's way more fun. Sunday, you had three players named to the All-Star team. So what's the meaning for a guy like you of telling players and telling their teammates that they're All-Stars? And tell us how you told them.
We had a team meeting, and we started the meeting out by talking to the guys about the All-Star break, like what's going to be available as far as like ballpark and workouts. And we wanted everybody to let us know where they're going and if they're going to meet us in Chicago, things like that. Just kind of, you know, organizational detail things. And then we went into the presentation of the three guys, and we introduced Hosey, which, even though everybody knows he's a lock to make it, it's fun to recognize him among his teammates because of what he represents for us. And the guys really enjoyed that. Then we went to Class A, who is a first-time All-Star, but I think everybody knew he was going to make it. And then I kind of asked the guys to give those two guys a round of applause. And then I said, oh, by the way, we have another one. And it was Andres Jimenez, and the place went bananas because he's so young. It's his first one. He's such a good kid. And the place just went bananas. So that was pretty cool.
That's great. So we're referring to Jose Ramirez, Emmanuel Clase, Andres Jimenez. Let me ask you about those guys. Jose Ramirez is amazing. He's one of the best players in the sport, and it feels like people know so little about him. So what don't people know or appreciate about that guy?
You know, part of it is, I'm sure, you know, he plays in Cleveland. You know, he's not real comfortable trying to do things in English, which that's okay. I'm not real comfortable doing things in Spanish. I mean, I get it. But as far as a baseball player, teammate, guy goes, you'd be hard-pressed to find anybody better. I mean, this kid, his motor never stops running. I think he's the best base runner in baseball. He may not be the fastest, but I do think he's the smartest. He can take an extra 90 feet as good as anybody in the game. He's always in position to kind of see like what could go wrong. And then when it does, he's in position to move up. He's not a second too late. And he's putting up these numbers, you know, with a really inexperienced lineup around him. And that's saying something.
Yeah. I mean, the Guardian stat of all time is that your roster's younger than any AAA roster. That's unbelievable.
Well, there are some days when it feels like that. right. There are other days, though. I mean, it you know, with youth comes a lot of enthusiasm, which that's the good part. And as long as they're willing to try to learn and try not to make the same mistake twice, you know, we're trying to be patient. We don't want to beat them over the head. We're trying to compete with some pretty good teams, and we're trying to do it with some young guys that have never done it before. Some days that's easier than others.
Yeah. Let me ask you about Class A, because what a freaking arm on this guy. Like that cutter at 100 and that slider is what, 93, 94? They are unhittable pitches. How would you describe the arm and the ugly swings that he induces with those pitches?
You know, you're seeing more of those types of swings now that he has commanded that slider. There were times when he was all fastball, and there'd be times where he probably gave up runs where he probably shouldn't have just because he's so nasty. But with that slider now, and like when he throws it 0-0 for a strike, and it's like, boy, that guy's in trouble because he has two such different speeds. And it's just, I mean, and he's so resilient. Like when he warms up, they say he takes like 7 or 8 pitches. And he's still really young, even though he's probably one of the veterans in our bullpen. So for him, it's fun to watch the progression from last year to this year where the game doesn't speed up. And we had a game against the Yankees last week where we were trying to let him back in it. And he just slowed it down, took a breath, and got out of it himself. And I don't know if that would have happened last year.
Well, he's something to watch. He really is. And then on Jimenez, I don't know how your team manages to make so many incredible trades, but you traded away Francisco Lindor, the face of your franchise. And now Jimenez, who's one of the guys you got back, is an All-Star, but Lindor isn't. Could you have envisioned that when you made the deal?
No, but I'll tell you what, Frankie's still a pretty good player. You know, I looked up the other day at 60 RBIs. We were just in a position where we needed to do that. And we were all kind of aware of it here. So, you know, try to make the best deal you can. I would say, I know Jimenez is really young, Ahmed Rosario has been really, really important to what we're doing because we don't have very many veterans. And he plays the game along with Hosey at such a high speed. Like, he gets down to first every time he hits the ball, like his pants are on fire. And I can't tell you, I always tell guys, the same guys that'll do that, they're the same guys that are going to back up bases. They're the same guys that are going to be on time. And so it's been really helpful for us having him, having Rosario too. Now, watching Jimenez develop from a kid last year where he was kind of nervous and thought he had to get a hit every game to stay in the lineup and actually went back to AAA, to a kid this year that makes the All-Star team, and deservedly so. It's been fun to watch the progression.
Terry, what was the scouting report on Jimenez when you got him? What was the upside? The anticipated upside.
You know, he was so young and he had skipped AA, but he had gone, you know, to the Mets and played pretty well in that COVID year. But the COVID year is kind of hard to, you know, how do you translate that into it's, you know, we've all seen some peculiarities there. But I think our scouts thought this kid could be an everyday shortstop. I have no doubt that he could do that. With Rosario here right now, he's playing second. In my opinion, he's playing a gold glove caliber second base. You know, does he end up staying there or going to short? He could do either, and he wouldn't skip a beat.
You know, recently you reached out to me to ask me to send along your numbers against Nolan Ryan. You batted against that guy 42 times, more than any other pitcher that you faced. So, first off, how did that happen? And second, what did you need those numbers for? Because I know you were up to something.
Somebody was asking me a question, and I had actually said, I said, I think I faced Nolan more than anybody else. And naturally, their first thought is, yeah, you're exaggerating. I just knew, like, the year in Cincinnati, me and Buddy Bell and I were roommates. I'd wake up in the morning and I'd say, I'm going to play today. He goes, we haven't played in a month. I said, Nolan's pitching. Somebody will not play today. And I'll be darned. I'd go in there, and there it was. It's just some right-hand hitters had a tendency of taking that day off for some strange reason.
Ryanitis.
I can see why.
Yeah. Do you have you ever heard the story of Oscar Gamble taking the team bus in Cleveland to the Big A in Anaheim? Yeah, so when Nolan would pitch out in Anaheim, they would put it up on the big marquee. You know, Nolan Ryan pitches today, and Oscar Gamble. I heard this from Alan Ashby, teammates in Cleveland, years ago. And as the team bus rolled up and they saw the marquee, Oscar would go, "Oh boy, we got Nolan today. 0-for-4, and don't get hit in the head. It's a good day today."
You know, it's funny you brought up Alan Ashby. We were playing in the Astrodome, and Nolan was like shaking off like four pitches. And I jumped out of the batter's box and called time. And then I rethought myself and I looked back at Ashby. I go, no, I don't want that time. I'm back.
I rescind.
Yeah, I didn't mean that.
Wait a second. This isn't college basketball where you only have a finite number of timeouts.
Nolan's probably the only guy. He and Dwight Gooden, at least in my era, where if a ball came near you, it made you rethink. Like, I mean, it was just that different. Like, I remember one time, I don't know how it didn't hit me. And I remember thinking, you know, if that hit me, that breaks my ribs. Because it was just different.
Yeah, well, speaking of getting hit, I got to ask you about a thing that happened to your team was like a week and a half ago. Josh Naylor hits a walk-off homer. And because he's Josh Naylor, he goes pretty much bonkers, I guess is a good way to describe
it. That's a good word. That's a good word.
Okay. On his way back to the dugout, he headbutts you. But you were obviously ready for him because you had a helmet on. So what the heck was going on there?
Well, he had, you know, we had seen what happened in Chicago back about a month ago when he had those late heroics and he just went bananas. So it was funny because the helmet was laying on the ground as I was walking out to the field. So I just for fun put it on. I'm going to tell you something. I'm glad I had it on because he didn't even remember headbutting me. He told me later that night his mom called him and said, "You better go check on Tito because you whacked him." And he goes, "No, I didn't." So one, I was kind of glad that he didn't do it on purpose, because, you know, some guys sometimes maybe take advantage of, you know, hey, we can hit the manager here and give a free shot. He didn't even remember. I think he just kind of, like you said, he goes bonkers every once in a while. So just stay out of the way.
But if you grab that helmet, you knew he was up to something, obviously.
Oh, well, you don't know what he's going to be up to, because he doesn't know what he's going to be up to. So, like I said, next time I'll probably just stay out of the way and say way to go later on.
Good plan.
Jason, I'm glad you brought that up. And Tito, I'm glad you clarified it, because I saw that video. And when I saw it, it's like, oh, man, so, Tito, something's seriously wrong. I just assumed you were wearing like the helmet in the dugout for the game, like you had something going on.
When the game was over, I came in and he had hit me hard. My glasses were like this. Chris and Cherney were sitting here. I looked like Max Patkin. And you guys are old enough to know who that is.
The clown of baseball.
Yeah.
The clown prince of baseball. Exactly.
And I looked just, I mean, I had to go to the eye doctor the next day to get my glasses fixed. My neck hurt. But you know what? We won. So I'd do it again.
All right. All you kids out there, Google Max Patkin so you get the visual of this.
It's funny. I'm dating myself because our guys don't know who he is.
Well, he was always showing up when you were playing. I know that. So here's another question for you. This is something everyone in the game messes up all the time. How many times this year have you called your team the Indians instead of the Guardians?
With the media, none. I'm real careful. Talking to, like, on the phone or to my buddies numerous times. You know what? I usually refer to the tribe, because that's what I kind of always, and I've done that a lot. So I've tried to just say Cleveland, because I don't want to get in a bad habit of doing that, but it's hard. It's hard for everybody. I can't tell you how many times me and Tom Hamilton have had to redo the radio show before the game because he's called us the tribe or the Indians.
So are there fines with this? Is there a pool and how many times it's going to happen?
Well, no, because if that was the case, there'd be a lot of people in trouble. But, you know, and I know that it's taken a while for fans, or for a lot of fans, to kind of wrap their arms around. And I get it. I just think kind of at the end of the day, I hope people understand that our organization was trying to do something really respectful.
Right.
And that's a good thing. So whether you love the name or not, again, I think what's really important is Cleveland's on the front. And I just want people to remember, hey, just trying to be respectful, not trying to do anything crazy. And I really think that's important.
Yeah.
Hey guys, hold on one sec. Can you talk for a sec?
Yeah.
Hold on. Hey, go get yourself. I'm on a podcast. Go get yourself. I'll come get you. Congratulations. That was Alex Call. We just called a kid up.
Oh, that's nice.
He's waiting outside my office, and I didn't want him standing there the whole time.
Oh, God. Now I really feel guilty.
That would have been a good podcast. Terry welcomes a kid to the big leagues.
We should have done it. That'd be better than we had Drew Carey's dogs on. Better than that.
This kid's a good kid. He's excited. And he was traded from the White Sox, and we're playing the White Sox, so I'm sure he's pretty jacked up.
Nice.
Yeah, do you have a favorite call-up story or, you know, you talked about the All-Star introductions, but you know, do you have a thing you do every time you call a guy up?
They're all pretty fun. When I was a Double-A manager in Birmingham, we called Mike Sorotka, was a left-hand pitcher, and he was going to go make a start from Birmingham to Chicago. At the time, Danny Evans was the assistant general manager, and he treated me really, really well. And he knew I was really nervous about this kid going to the major leagues. So back then, he had this little, I don't know, pitch tracker. I don't know what they called it. And he let me put it in my back pocket. And when I was coaching third, I'd pull it out every once in a while just to see how I was doing, because I was so nervous for him. Because, I mean, that's a big jump, especially back then. And they were a team that was competing for first place. I was beside myself.
Wow. How did he do?
He did okay. Yeah. You know what? And he ended up having a pretty good career. But, again, I was so nervous for him that I end up making myself a mess.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Guys tend to think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort, but it's possible to have it both ways. I'm all set for summer thanks to Mack Weldon. The Vesper polo shirt is so breathable you can wear it on the golf course, but it looks classy enough to wear to a party. The Maverick Tech chino short is ultra flexible, and the Pima crew neck t-shirt is perfect for those casual weekends. There's no need to be uncomfortable in your clothing ever again. Some guys just want to look good without calling attention to themselves. Mack Weldon apparel gives you understated good looks for understated confidence. Mack Weldon clothes are designed to fit your style and the demands of modern life. They look like regular clothes but feel like the latest in modern comfort. They're the go-to choice for guys who want to look great without even trying. Breathable underwear that keeps you cool, dry, and comfy all day. Crazy comfortable but elevated sweatpants. An upgraded classic polo with antimicrobial silver threads. An ultra-soft antimicrobial tee for when you need to stay fresh longer. That's the Silver Crew Neck T-shirt. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code MLBSHOW. That's MackWeldon.com. Promo code MLBSHOW.
Two different people told me that I needed to ask you about this. How are your barber's skills these days? Isn't it true you're now the personal stylist for your friend Mike Barnett?
I'm wondering who gave you that information, first of all.
Yeah, we're not saying that. Right. Not revealing any sources.
You know, poor Barney. Barney bears the brunt of a lot of things that probably are very immature, but we all get laughs about it, and he's so good-natured about it. I told him on the plane yesterday, because we had a really tough road trip, and I usually mess with him on the flights, and I said, Barney, we're past haircuts. I said, we need a human sacrifice, and I said, you're applying.
Wow. So that sounded like pretty upbeat news. How do you react to that?
He just laughs. He always laughs. The only time he doesn't laugh is when, if I get too aggressive and I cut him and he starts bleeding. Like the other day, he was putting up a little bit of a fuss, in my opinion, being a baby. And he tried to knock my hand away and I took like half his eyebrow and his blood's coming down into his eye. And it's like, but he's so good natured about it. He just kind of laughs it off and everybody gets a chuckle out of it.
All right, so just so people understand what the heck we're even talking about, you've got a pair of clippers. Is that
They're called the peanut, and they have a little peanut thing, and like you can just run it over your head real quick, and you're clean and good to go.
All right,
Jimmy probably knows that, and it's battery operated. When he hears that thing go on, his whole life, like he is like so. Saw him two trips ago. He was trying to sleep on the plane. And he had one eye closed and one was kind of like looking over at me, like, what's he doing? But it's just, you know, the people that aren't in a baseball clubhouse probably don't understand it. But our closest friends, sometimes we just try to see how miserable we can make them.
All right, but you have no hair. Jim Deshaies has no hair.
Right.
Mike has hair. He wants to have hair. Am I right?
Yeah, that's even more reason why I'd probably do it. You know, I'll run it over my head and go, see, Barney, I'm not being a baby. Why are you being a baby? And the fact that he's so proud of that just makes it more enticing.
I'm sure it does. All right. Now, you also had some harsh words recently for those robot umps. Have you ever even met a robot ump? Like, what did a robot ump ever do to set you off?
In spring training, we're trying to ramp up this spring a little differently than ever before, or like in spring training 2.0 a couple years ago with COVID. Yeah. So we didn't always have umpires. So we would use the computer
The ABS.
And I remember thinking, boy, that computer would throw me out of a lot of games because it just hasn't figured out yet, like the slow breaking ball. Like Jim DeShays would throw the fastball, ride it up here, and then he'd spin that breaking ball, that slow one, and there'd never be a ball. So I just think, I mean, I know that we all argue about balls and strikes, but when you look at the way balls and strikes are called, especially compared to maybe 30, 40 years ago, man, they're right around the plate, man. I mean, you don't see any egregious calls ever. I mean, you know, we're complaining when a ball's this far off the plate. That's pretty good.
Well, so if we went to the robots, who would you argue with about that stuff?
You know, it's funny, on the same lines. there was the time I got thrown out this year. I don't get thrown out very much anymore, but the one time I did, I told the umpires, I said, whoever's in New York, tell them they get credit for throwing me out because they stink. Because they overruled one play, and I remember thinking, I was frustrated. But, you know, I mean, that's a whole other can of worms. Sometimes I swear that we see something, and then they don't overrule it, or they do, and it makes you scratch your head.
I always enjoy that when the call gets overruled from New York, but the umpires who throw you out of the game are the people that actually agree with you.
And they've told me that before, which is, you're right, it's hard to yell at them because they don't have anything to do with it, but you got to yell at somebody.
You turn around and just look up skyward and just start yelling, yell to the heavens. What about, aside from the ABS system and RoboAmps, what about the other stuff that may be coming? Do you like or dislike banning the shift, the bigger bases, things of that nature?
I'm a little nervous about banning the shift. And the reason being is I think it would be a quick fix for some offense, but I think the unintended consequences that will come into play as we go are not good for the game. And by that, I mean, you know, right now teams are shifting so much. You're encouraging teams like us to put the ball in play, hit the ball the other way, you know, use the whole field. If you're not allowed to shift, you're going to encourage every guy that swings up and tries to pull everything because they're going to get rewarded for that by hitting that ball through the hole. I just don't think that's good for the game.
Yeah, it's all a work in progress. We'll keep you posted. You know, we do a lot of trivia on this show, and I got a trivia question for you.
Oh, boy.
What active manager has managed his current team the longest?
Well, I think somebody had it on the scoreboard. That's got to be me. It was on the scoreboard the other day. That's the only reason I know.
All right, so you definitely cheated on this, but you've been there 10 years now, man.
You know, it goes fast.
Yeah, in a way, is Cleveland now a bigger part of your legacy as a manager in some ways than Boston, even though you won two World Series with the Red Sox?
I don't know, Jay. You know what? I don't even know what I don't care about my legacy. I care about us winning tonight. Yeah. This has been a very special place for me. There's no getting around it. I mean, 10 years is a long time. And, you know, as beat up as I've gotten physically, I probably wouldn't be doing this anymore if I didn't care about the people here so much. It's kind of kept me going through some really hard times. So, again, I don't know how much longer I'm going to do it, but this is a pretty special place. There's no getting around that for me.
Well, you just touched on this, and we mentioned all your ailments earlier. If you're up to 40 surgeries, have you thought about how much longer you want to manage?
Yeah, I've given it thought, which is new because, you know, I never used to really even think that. And I've thought about it from time to time, like, hey, you know, because to do this job right, and I care about doing it right. One, I owe it to the organization. I owe it to the players. But then myself included, like, you don't want to shortchange anybody. But then, you know, the travel, things I used to laugh about, but I'd hear guys, you know, complain about the travel, and I'd be like, what are you, nuts? Well, now I'm starting to do it because it starts to beat you up a little bit. So there's going to come a time where I think maybe it's not the right thing for me to do, or it could come a time when a team feels that way. But, you know, regardless, I don't want to just manage myself into the ground. And then when I do leave baseball, not be able to enjoy myself.
Yeah, it's always a hard question to answer, but
it's been my whole life.
Would you, Tito? Would you transition into a front office role at some point?
Oh, I don't think I'm smart enough to do that. I do think I would like to obviously stay in the game because I don't know anything else, nor do I really want to. I just, you know, trying to figure out when to pull the trigger, like, because the last thing I really ever want to do is step away and then be like, oh man, I shouldn't have done that. Mm-hmm. Well, that's no good. So yeah. I got some thinking to do, but again, I'm in a good place. I have good people I can talk to, and that helps a ton.
You know, it's hard to imagine the game without you. So I hope it's a long time.
Thank you.
One more thing before I let you go. Our friend Tim Kirkshin is going into the writer's wing of the Hall of Fame in a couple of weeks. I think I was the first to tell you that was happening, right? So do you have a favorite Tim Kirkshin story?
Yeah, but I don't think I can. Well, I can tell you this one. The first, when I joined ESPN, we went down and we were going to do the Braves. Remember how they used to do 30 teams in 30 days or something?
Oh, yeah.
And it was me and Tim Kirkshin and Dan Stolman was there. And they put us up at this hotel. They called it a hotel. It was like it was Camping World USA or something. And each little room was like a log cabin. And I thought they were pulling a joke on me because I was a new guy. I mean, my room had bunk beds. And I called the operator for room service. And she's like, did you see the candy machine in the lobby? I'm like, yes. She goes, that's room service. And Tim, the next morning, when we were sitting out there waiting for a ride, and you've been around Tim, he started laughing. And when he started laughing, that laugh of his is so infectious. But, you know, I'm glad you brought his name up. He showed me around. He didn't have to do that. Like, he was just so Tim. And anybody that's been around him, like, I can see you smiling. It's hard not to like him. Like, you got to really try if you don't want to like him. He's truly one of the sweethearts in the game.
There's nobody who doesn't like Tim Kirkshin. The look on your face right now, the look on our faces right now, that's the look I get from everybody when we mention Timmy's name. That's not an accident.
It's appropriate. And I will be so proud when they call his name, along with about a million other people that, you know, have come across him, because that's just how special he is.
Yeah. Well, you're special yourself, my friend. So thank you so much for taking the time to do this. Thanks to your teeth for fitting us into their busy schedule. look forward to seeing you somewhere down the road. We can swap volleyball memories or whatever else.
Hey, you guys, I enjoyed it. You guys take care, okay?
All right, Tito, great buddy. To be with you. And hey, congratulations to Alex.
Thank you.
Okay there, JD. It is time for the part of this show I know you've been waiting for all day long. It is listener trivia, our way of involving our favorite listeners in this show. And Doug and I get this wrong pretty much every week. We had Ken Rosenthal in here a few weeks ago. That didn't help. So now it is your turn to save the trivia day. Are you ready, sir?
I'm ready.
Okay.
Bring it on.
I actually think you're going to be our trivia MVP this week because guess what? We have actual Jim Deshays type trivia. Who knew that was a thing? And here to help is your friend and mine, Chris Kemka of NBC Sports Chicago. Chris, thanks for joining me and Jim Deshays.
Oh, of course. I had to jump in this week.
Yeah, you did. After we put out the weekly call for trivia, our friend Chris Kemka innocently tweeted a question that was obviously about Jim Deshays. Jimmy never mentioned your name, so I replied, why would you ask that question? Chris, what did you reply?
Well, I had this question.
Wait, we're not going to give the question yet. I just want you to tell them.
You know, but it's just an innocent little trivia question. It has nothing to do with anything, I don't think.
Just out of the blue.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. It had nothing to do with anything except the fact that Jim Deshays is here. So for the record, you two do know each other. Isn't that correct?
We do indeed.
Yeah, I've had the pleasure of having worked some. sorry, I had some. I've had the pleasure of working some Cub games in the past with Jim. It was a lot of fun. I've always enjoyed his work. Just a great broadcast, and I enjoy his work today on Marquee. I had to come to see one of my friends from the past.
Yeah, the throat clear there for a moment. I didn't think it was a legitimate throat clear. I thought it was like I had the pleasure, like tongue in cheek pleasure. But yeah, we did. We worked together and broke bread together, as a matter of fact.
But I bet you never saw Jim Deshays hit a whole lot, did you?
Oh, a little bit. Somewhat.
All right. Okay, well, that kind of sets us up for the trivia question. So it's time for you to hit us with your question. And by us, I mean, obviously, Jim Deshays. Okay. But I'll chip in here so we can jointly get it wrong.
Okay, here we go. Who has the most plate appearances, the second most plate appearances in Major League history without ever recording an extra base hit?
Who has the second most career plate appearances without recording an extra base hit? Just something you happen to think of just sitting around the house on a Sunday morning, Saturday morning, whatever day it was. All right, so we mentioned earlier in the show that the record for this sort of thing is held by Jim Deshays. So, Jim, I actually remember that you and I were tracking this for a while, tracking guys who had a shot to break your record. For some reason, the name Barry Zito popped in my head, but I honestly don't have any idea if it was him. So it's your record. I'm thinking you should just know this stuff off the top of your head.
But Barry, I think, I'm intrigued by that answer because now that you say that, it changes what I was thinking. First of all, we're looking for a guy with that, like me, who had that rare combination of lack of power, lack of speed. Somebody that stuck around for a while and got enough ABs. The one guy who was in hot pursuit of me for a time was Frank Castillo.
Yes.
But I don't know if somebody has surpassed Frank Castillo.
Right. We talked a lot about Frank Castillo back in the day.
Yeah. And I hadn't looked in a number of years, but when Frank was active, he was closing in on me.
Okay. So,
and beyond that, I have no other guess. You brought up Zito, and that kind of rings a bell, too.
I'm going to defer to you on this. It's probably a big mistake, but let's do that. Chris, is there any chance that Jim has this right and the correct answer is Frank Castillo?
I'll tell you this. Frank Castillo's third.
He's third all time or third closest?
Third all time.
So there's somebody in between.
JD number one, there's Frank Castillo number three, and there's a person in between. What era?
Was it Zito?
It was.
This is what we get for listening to you.
It's like the SATs. You got to trust your first instinct.
Look at this. For all the times you say that you're not good at answering these trivia questions, so we knocked out who's first. You gave the next two answers. I mean, that's got to be extra credit. You sell yourself short.
Think about how hard it is to know the three players in history with the most at-bats and no extra base hits. We named all three, and we still got the question wrong. Well, think how hard that is.
Could you imagine if you, like, were on a quiz show? Like Jeopardy or one of these, $1 million whatever.
Oh, no.
And that was a question. Like, who would know? Like, you two guys might be the only people. Now me. We three may be the only people prior to the airing of this podcast that know that information.
I don't assume we can find a way to work Virgil Barnes into the conversation, do you think?
Is he four? He's number four?
Yeah.
How close did Barry Zito wind up coming?
Okay, so it was actually pretty close. 440 for Jim. All right, and then Barry Zito 418. So, a mild 22 plate appearances to go. That's not bad. I had a hint ready to go too, but didn't even need that.
So if the Giants had just given Barry Zito one more year on that crazy contract, we wouldn't even be having this conversation. What a mistake by them.
Yeah, or if somebody had gotten to Barry before he shut it down and said, before you walk away, you might want to pursue this.
Yeah, because having made $140 million, there was one thing still burning in his soul.
Yeah.
Break your record. Something like that. Anyway, Chris, loved the question. Sorry we managed to get it wrong. I should mention, everybody, Chris is a great follow on Twitter at C Kamka, K-A-M-K-A. It was great getting you back on to Starkville, man. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, I'm glad to be here. I don't even consider you getting the question wrong. I mean, you named Zito and Jim named Frank. You got the top two. That's extra credit. That's getting it right with extra credit.
All right. We've now decided we got it right. I love it. Okay. We retroactively got the question right.
I'm signing up for Professor Campus class every other semester. I like the way he grades.
Exactly right. All right. Well, we actually have one more Jim Deshays bonus question this week. So I just want the mayor, as he grades our answer on this one, to keep that in mind. Okay.
All right.
Okay. All right. Here's our second bonus Jim Deshays inspired question. We asked our listeners, as we always do, for trivia questions, and they really got in the spirit by asking Jim Deshays related questions. Now, this second question was asked by David Branson, and unfortunately, he was not able to join us live, but I think we can still have some fun trying to answer it. So I will read the question, then we'll thrash it out. Nice. Here we go. Jim Deshays once struck out 8 batters through 3 innings. And then, just over the weekend, Spencer Strider of the Braves became the 9th pitcher with 9 Ks through 3 innings. So his question, who was the first pitcher to strike out 9 hitters through 3 innings? I think before we get into this, we should point out David did not quite capture the essence of your record. You actually struck out the first 8 batters of your game, which was against the Dodgers. And what did Tommy Lasorda then do, Jim?
Tommy pinch hit for the starter was Dennis Powell. And he pinch hit a fellow by the name of Larry C. And I got him to a 2-2 count. And I was pretty sure that if I threw a fastball shoulder high, I was going to get a swing and miss. And I just left it down a little bit and he popped up to second base.
But obviously, Tommy did not want you to strike out 9.
Tommy had seen enough. Tommy was frustrated. The Dodgers were supposed to win that year and we were on our way to winning the NL West. He was not happy. The people in the dome were hooting and hollering. We're all over Tommy. So, yeah, he had seen enough. I kind of don't blame him. His guys were probably hung over. I'm not sure what was going on.
Right. We don't care what was going on. Yeah. Besides, you didn't strike out 9 hitters in 3 innings. That's the thing that we have to guess. Who was the first to do that? I'm going to guess Tom Seaver. It's so obvious it must be wrong. So, Jim, do you have a guess on this one?
So here's the thing. When I had the 8 strikeouts, it was deemed to be the modern major league record.
That's 8 in a row.
To start a game.
It's a little different record.
Yes, the record, but the all-time record going into the Wayback Machine was held by the fellow by the name of Mickey Welch. You're probably familiar with the name. He might be a Hall of Famer. He struck out the first 9 batters of a game way back in, I think Mickey played in the late 18, early 1900s. So I don't know if he would be considered a candidate for this question because it happened so many years ago. But beyond him, then you go to the Seavers and the Gibsons and the Ryans.
Why do we have to go beyond him? See, this is the beauty of having a person on who actually almost set a record because now he knows who actually did set the record that he did not set. That would be you. Right. So we're totally going with Mickey Welch here because we went with your answer last time. That didn't work out. So we're going to do it again. Let's bring in the acting mayor of Starkville. It's our old friend, Cam Molina. Cam, we were going to guess Tom Seaver, but now we're on to Mickey Welch as the first ever to strike out 9 3 innings.
Jay, it's awesome to be back here on Starkville. Really missed it. I thought you guys were going to need Chris's extra credit there for just a split second if you had selected Tom Seaver as your answer. You guys went with Mickey Welch, and I'm happy to report, August 28, 1884, Mickey Welch started the game by striking out 9 consecutive batters, so your answer is correct. Great work.
How about that? Now, see, we ask Glanville questions every week about himself that he gets wrong. We give Jim Deshays 2 questions. He gets one of them right. Like, it's time for Jeopardy, man. I'll take Jim Deshays extra base hits for 400.
Yeah, Mickey Welch, I believe it was for the Giants against the Cleveland Spiders.
The Spiders?
I believe so, yeah.
So it barely counts then. But that was... That's why
I always considered, when I had that record, I always considered mine legit because it was the Cleveland Spiders. You know.
Yeah, there's the Dodgers and the Cleveland Spiders. Yeah, it's more impressive. We know the answer. Yeah. But whatever, whether we get the questions right or wrong, the best part of the segment doesn't actually involve us. It's the part where we bring in the mayor, in this case, Cam, the acting mayor, to play another great play-by-play clip involving this week's answer. So, Cam, I don't know what you have for us this week, but there's a really good chance it does not involve any Mickey Welch play-by-play.
Yeah, YouTube, the archives don't span back that far. I wish that that'd be really cool, but, you know, maybe carrier pigeons passed around the word about Mickey Welch's performance. Now, today's soundbite, I promise you, it is riveting, and it's not just some random pop-out, but there's a theme to it, an all-star game tied to it. 16 years to the day that we're recording this, July 11th, 2006 at PNC Park, Barry Zito took to the mound for his third career All-Star Game appearance, pitching to Chase Utley in the bottom of the fifth inning.
And Barry Zito, the left-hander, takes over. Rogers, Halliday, Zito, so many good power arms left for Ozzie Guillen to come out of the bullpen, and Chase Utley is first up for the Phillies. 1-2. Utley is jammed, and he pops it up into shallow right. Out is the second baseman, Michael Young, and he's there for out number one.
Wasn't that a magical moment? I thought he was going to hit a long drive to the wall. It was caught or something. But whatever. Joe Buck on the call. Barry Zito inducing an all-star pop-up. You're welcome, America. Look, we had 2 spectacular questions and a really fun segment. Jim, I think you learned trivia. What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, that was, I thought it was clean. I thought that Chris Kampka came in hard, and I think we nailed it. Despite your self-facing opinion of your trivia skills, I thought we nailed it.
Okay, so we've now decided we got both of them right. Let's do that. Definitely go with that.
And if only Joe Buck knew back in 2006 what power arms really looked like. Fast forward to 2022 when the whole world throws 100 miles per hour.
I know, for sure. All right, that was fun. That was tremendous. Chris, great job, man. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, thank you. By the way, Mickey Welch had 121 extra base hits.
Oh, sure.
Strange but true.
All right, it's time for our Strange But True segment, where we get to laugh about the weirdest stuff that happened in baseball in the last week. We should really go down the Mickey Welch extra base hit portfolio, but I think we're going to be more current than that. Jimmy, you're going to love this. We have a couple lined up. First Strange But True feat of the week. This is from the Orioles-Rangers game last Tuesday in Baltimore. This was an all-time strange but true fiasco, okay? Along the way, the score was 4-0, then 4-4, then 7-4, then 7-7, then 8-7, then 9-8, then 9-9. It might have gone on that way all night, except luckily for everybody, in extra innings, up stepped Cedric Mullins.
In the left field from Mullins. That is going to get past Duggar. Everybody go home. One of the most ridiculous baseball games of the year. It belongs to the Baltimore Orioles.
Kevin Brown on the call from Massanin. I can tell you now that as soon as he got off the air, he tweeted at me after that game because he knew correctly that, that was my kind of game. So, but Jim, here's the strange but true part. The Orioles gave up game tying or go-ahead home runs in the seventh inning and the eighth inning and the ninth inning of this game, and they won. You want to guess how many teams have ever done that in history?
None. I'm guessing.
None's a fine guess. No. Okay. That had never happened because how the heck could it happen? Amazing. There was a little assist in the end from the zombie runners, but the game tying homer stuff, that was all on them. Just curious, what was the wackiest game that you were ever a part of or your team was ever a part of?
That's probably 88 in the Dome, the 24 inning game with the Dodgers, 24 or 26 or whatever. I don't even remember now. We played, it was over 7 hours. And at the very top of the show, you mentioned about me pinch hitting, and I actually pinch hit in the game. That's how
you pinch hit in that game.
I pinch hit in that game for Dave Smith. Jeff Hamilton ended up pitching, third baseman, ended up pitching for the Dodgers in the game. Fernando Valenzuela ended up playing first base at some point in the game. Just a wild, crazy. And then we came back, and that was a Saturday night. And we came back the next day on Sunday and played 13 innings. So that stands out. And then, of course,
it's good.
The 86 playoffs with the Mets, the 16-inning game. When we had the 3-0 lead going into the ninth and the Mets tied and we went back and forth. And that was one of the greatest games of all time.
For sure. I think we zipped through the most important part. How'd your pinch hitting appearance go?
I struck out, as you might expect.
You didn't hit a bullet into the right field corner?
No. I'll tell you the funny part of that story. So Mike Scott and I were sitting in the dugout watching this thing unfold. And at some point along the way, we're like, let's go up to the clubhouse. So we go up and we're going to have a rally beer. We're going to drink a beer and the Astros are going to win this game because of it. So, I mean, I felt like Babe Ruth or so old school, like having a beer at some point and then pinch hitting in the same game. It was like beer league softball. But I can honestly say that drinking that one beer did not impact my performance. The outcome would have been the same whether I had the rally beer or not.
Yeah. How could we tell the difference? Yeah.
And Dave Smith was rightfully just beside himself. Like, he's pinch hitting for me. And it was only because I was left-handed and Smitty was right-handed.
Just that passed for analytics back in the day.
Yeah, that was it.
Especially at 1 a.m, whatever the heck that was.
Yeah, well, here's a starting pitcher that does stand up there every now and then, and here's a bullpen guy that never does, so let's try this guy.
Yeah, right. Okay, we got one more of these. It was such a nutty week. Let's go back to the 4th of July. This was a White Sox-Twins game, and then Byron Buxton did his thing. You need to listen to this.
High fly right center. Buxton chasing it. Making the catch at the wall. They've got a possible triple play. There's two. Now a throw to first will be a triple play. Byron Buxton catching it at the wall, and there'll be three outs at the end of all this.
I think they tried to turn four outs.
Yeah, they did. They threw the ball at first.
Yeah. So it was Dick Bremer on the call. It was an 8-5 triple play where Buxton made just an insane catch. Then the White Sox base runners just did the rest. They ran themselves into the other outs. On the White Sox call, Jason Benetti actually says, "What's Moncada doing?" Like, didn't miss a beat in the middle of all this. And even the Twins couldn't answer that question because Gio Urshela, he records the second out. He records the third out. What did he do next? He threw to first to complete the quadruple play. But he couldn't do that. There are only two on.
Yeah.
At any rate, that was the first 8-5 triple play ever turned, which seems impossible, right? Like, Jim, did you ever have a triple play recorded behind you?
Well, I did. I went down into the Google machine rabbit hole because I recalled that there was one turned behind me, possibly even two, against the Dodgers. First and second situation, same situation. I believe shallow fly ball to right that the base runner thought was going to drop in. And I can't remember who the right fielder was, made the catch. Maybe Mike Sims. But anyway, we turned that into a 9-5-6 triple play, a more conventional triple play.
There's nothing conventional.
Yeah, and I seem to remember I seem to remember having one in Atlanta too, but I'm not sure.
All right, well, we're not going to research that one, but guess what? Yes. We did find this one. Don't you want to hear it again?
Oh, I would love to hear it again.
Let's hear it.
Alfredo with the foul down the right side. Sims moving over, and he'll make the catch. Tagging Sharperson to throw to third. They're going to get him by plenty. Nobody at second. They go there. And a triple play. Hello. He is going to sky in foul territory. There's Sims. Good position. The big guy, strong arm. You can see why he's going to go to the outfield. There's the play. They double up Sharperson. Now Javier trying to go to second base. And there is Cedeno running him down. And they get him.
Oh, how was that? How'd you enjoy that magic moment?
That was beautiful. Who are the voices? Do we know who the voices were on that?
I don't know. I don't know what the broadcast was. We'll have to get. Yeah. We'll have to look into that and give them credit because we do that here. But anyway, yeah. That's on YouTube. You should see the look on Tommy Lasorda's face. You inflicted a lot of pain on that guy, man.
Yeah. Like,
no wonder he pinch hit for the pitcher to annoy you.
Yeah, he was. He was not happy. It was quite often. He was not happy with how things were going. They won their fair share. I think that was 88, right? I think they ended up having a pretty good year, if I recall.
That's how to win in the World Series. What was so good about it?
Yeah.
I don't have the date.
Tommy washed it down with a plate of linguine. He was fine.
Exactly right. I think that's what we should do. That's what we should do to celebrate that we have just completed an entire Starkville episode. You and me didn't even need that Glanville. Started nailing trivia left and right. Had a wonderful time. Don't you agree?
This was brilliant. I do have to circle back to one strange but true. It remains a highlight of my life, my career. And you'll remember it. The young Frankenstein's outfield. And maybe you don't remember it.
I do.
It's in the dome. It was like my first or second year as a broadcaster. And Jack McKeon's managing the Reds. And he puts out an outfield. Dimitri Young, Chris Stein, and Michael Frank. And I'm looking at it, I'm filling out my scorebook, and I'm thinking, Young, Frank, and Stein. This is incredible. I said, I got to get a hold of Jason. And I think I got a hold of you before the game even started. If not, it was immediately after the game. But that's still one of the highlights of my broadcast career.
That was good stuff. Like, if that were today, 50 people would have tweeted it before you could even dial the phone.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's okay.
Back in the day when you could get a scoop.
Yeah, the young Frankenstein scoop from Woodward and Bernstein, otherwise known as Stark and DeShays. Something like that. Our Pulitzer is in the mail, or not.
Yeah, and the other thing was, I mean, you would like to think that Jack McKeon's like, I'm going to have some fun, but there's no way Jack McKeon knew he was putting the young Frankenstein outfield out there. There's
you don't think so?
Chance. No.
He probably didn't even know who was in the lineup. The cigar smoke obscured the lineup card. He just wrote down names. Whoever. Pretty random.
Let's go. Whoever wants to play. First nine guys that show up.
All right. Well, I'm certainly glad we got that in there. Jim, it was such a pleasure to have you here and to share this last, I don't know how many minutes we've been yucking it up, but it was an absolute pleasure. Please come back and do this again. We might just kick Glanville out and have you come back and do it every week.
Yeah, I would be happy. You know, I could be like Joan Rivers. I could be your you know, sometime your guest host. There's a reference to young ones. I'll have to look up.
Joan Rivers
used to fill
Johnny
in for Carson.
Fill in?
Yeah.
Okay.
She's filling for Carson.
All right. I take that, Glanville.
I can be Joan.
We got Joan DeShays here. All right. That's going to do it for this week's show. We'll be bringing you podcast magic just like this all season long on the Athletic Baseball Show, which is available in its entirety, absolutely free, everywhere you get your podcasts. And if you'd like to read any of the fabulous writing in The Athletic, let me tell you how you can do that. If you go to theathletic.com/baseballshow and you're a new subscriber, you can subscribe for just $1 a month for the next 6 months. But also remember, you too can be part of this podcast. Every show, we pick the most fun listener trivia question of the week. Then that listener gets to join us right here and prove, once again, there's almost no baseball trivia question we can't get wrong. So how would you submit a question? Well, you can email us at starkville@theathletic.com, or you can hit us up on Twitter. You can find Doug Glanville at DougGlanville. You can find me at JaySonst. That's Jason with a Y, S-T. Please remember to hashtag those questions, #StarkvilleQS. So, thanks to Jim Deshaies and Terry Francona for joining us. Thanks to the acting mayor of Starkville, Cameron Molina, for producing us and putting up with us. And thanks to you all for listening. Tomorrow is Roundtable Day here on the Athletic Baseball Show. And next week, it's a little funky because of the All-Star Game and our crazy schedules. But I promise you, Doug and I will see you soon on Starkville.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.